Three people have declared their intention to seek the Democratic nomination for Alaska governor in 2010. Among them, Bob Poe of Anchorage, who joins me in the studio now. Mr. Poe, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Ed.
Well, let's jump into some local issues. One of the big ones here in Sitka is ferry service.
Mm-hmm.
If you're elected, what will you do to make sure that Sitka residents can easily get in and out of town here and into other communities throughout Southeast?
I understand at this point Sitka is seeing about once a week ferry service. The fast ferries are down about half the time. And, you know, that's just not adequate transportation. But I think we need to really take a hard look at what we're doing in terms of marine transportation. I see we've kind of got this bifurcated system now. One is sort of the cruise ship style ferry, the Columbia and the Matanuska and Malaspina. And then we have the fast ferries, and the fast ferries aren't doing the job they were hoped to do. And the big ships are very expensive to operate, and they have all these other departments to them that, you know, really aren't about being a highway. And I travel a lot and I've gone to BC a number of times, and getting on the BC ferry, it's almost frightening how fast you load and unload. I mean, it's all about get your car on, get your person up in the passenger deck, and they move you to the next place and get off and go on your way. I think we've really got to look at making the ferry system that kind of transportation. Maybe it's time to start thinking about, does it make any sense to really go to Prince Rupert or Bellingham? Maybe the road you can find in Skagway or Haines is perfectly adequate to head out of Southeast Alaska. But we forget that the ferry system's also a lot about getting between Southeast communities. So maybe we need to find a way to get back to more basic but more frequent transportation that's really focused on serving the needs of Southeast Alaska.
Your campaign website includes a lot of plans for energy. And here in Sitka, you know, our experts are telling us that they need to expand our hydroelectric power to keep up with demand and keep us off diesel. Do you support the expansion of hydropower? And if elected, will you support state funding projects to do that?
Well, I ran the Alaska Energy Authority, and Rocky and I had many a discussion about your, I think it's Blue Lake is your system right now. And Southeast is really blessed to have good hydroelectric power. I don't know your current baseload demands, and so I'm going to assume that your engineers have done their calculations right. I do support hydroelectric, and the other thing in Southeast that's really important is a Southeast intertie, so that we can take stranded electrons and move them around in areas like Ketchikan and Wrangell, but also Angoon and Hoonah and areas like that to get cheaper power to those areas. So hydropower in Southeast is a good way to do that. It often is a costly thing up front, but you know, it can make a heck of a lot of sense. I was on the Alaska Power Authority board when we did the last big hydroelectric project, which was Bradley Lake. And when I ran the Alaska Industrial Development Authority and the Energy Authority, I also oversaw the selling of the four dam pool projects to the two Southeast projects to the communities they serve, and the two up in Valdez and Kodiak to those communities. So I've been involved in this for a long time. I of course have to see what the plans are and what the costs are, but I understand hydro and I do support it, and I do believe it works really well.
Related to that, with some of the smaller communities, there's talk about running power lines out to some of these smaller communities. Mm-hmm. That's certainly an expensive project, but some say a very necessary project. Wondering where you stand on that idea of running power lines out to communities that kind of are around us.
Your first question was about transportation, and really interties are transportation systems. They're just transporting electrons. In the rail belt, between Fairbanks and Homer, that intertie that connects all those utilities is owned by the state, operated by the state. I think we have to look at whether it's electric interties or it's pipelines. We have to start looking at the transportation responsibilities of the state. And so I think the state does have to reckon with tying communities together. And that's the best way to build in efficiencies. You generate the electrons where you have large resources, and then you transmit them to communities that need them. That's the way electric systems work.
Let's move on to economic development. I know you have a background in economic development, financial management. So one of the big worries here, and I'm sure in a lot of other communities, is dipping sales tax revenues. We were down 15% in the second quarter. Third quarter numbers haven't come out yet. Partly due to drop off in cruise ship traffic, partly due to the just global recession that we were coming out of. And then in addition to that, we've recently lost Sheldon Jackson College, you know, so there are all sorts of economic issues here. And I guess I wonder, what in your opinion is the key to keeping communities like Sitka in good economic shape?
Well, first a little bit about that background. So I ran Alaska Industrial Development Authority. I was also president of Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. And I did things like lead the state's efforts to attract the FedEx and UPS cargo hubs to Anchorage, making it the third busiest cargo airport in the world. So that employs about 12% of Anchorage today. But I've also been involved in a number of other kinds of economic development efforts. For instance, in Ketchikan, I was involved in helping the shipyard get a second ship lift so that they could work much more efficiently. I always wanted to get involved in the water project out at Silver Bay, but never seemed to have the opportunity. A while back, when I ran the Energy Authority, we realized that we needed to build capacity in rural communities to kind of deal with the bureaucracy that came with power systems and power cost equalization. So we put together something called the Village Management Institute that we used to do at Sheldon Jackson. And we would bring city clerks and things from villages all over the state. We'd bring them here, and then we'd bring the instructors to Sheldon Jackson. So I think when you look at economic development, you always have to look at the strengths that that particular community has. I mean, there's hardly a nicer place in Alaska than Sitka, and I'm not saying that to pander. I mean, my wife and I have often talked about wanting to retire in Sitka. We have a house in Excursion Inlet now. And so that's obviously one, but you don't want to see a community turn into retirees and people who take care of vacationers' home, summer homes and stuff. And so you have to find those kinds of businesses that make sense. Juneau's kind of an interesting example. You know, who would have thought that Alaska Brewing, that Juneau would be a center for microbrews? And I mean, it really is. That's quite a business today. Another example that's happening in Juneau is the development of wild Alaska salmon oil. I've been to China about 8 times in the last 3 years, and every time I go, my friends call me up from Beijing or Shanghai, and they say, oh, please, Bob, bring wild Alaska salmon oil. Well, I'm here to tell you there isn't anything like that, because I've gone to every, health food store in Anchorage, and you can't find it, until just recently at Costco, there were these huge pallets of wild Alaska salmon oil. I tried to find out where that came from. Well, it came from Sandra Lane, who used to own Taku Smokeries over in Juneau. Now, there's an example where you're producing something that, I'm telling you, 400 million Chinese that have reached middle class in China want that stuff, just a mere 400 million. It's something that's using the waste product from salmon that we're already producing. That business makes a lot of sense. Now, and let me just give you another example, and then I'll go right to Sitka. So next week I'll be at AFN, and I'll be helping introduce a product called Arzotica. Now, Arzotica is produced by the, 3 women from Chivac, lovely, very worldly women, so don't misunderstand that these ladies are, really rural. And they came up with the idea to make cosmetics out of the botanicals that grow above the Arctic Circle. Because they have 24 hours of sunlight, they also have really high in antioxidants. So they've put together this line of cosmetics, and it's really a neat idea, and it has a lot of real potential, and they've got great designs and great marketing. Now, here's the thing. How many people buy something from Tom's of Maine? How many people have bought Burt's Beeswax, for their lips? Those are all similar companies, and today they employ hundreds of people. So what are those things that Sitka might do? I know water was one, and, you went out with a request for proposals and found a company to come in, and they had to do a lease with the city and all that sort of thing. A lot of times that's not how these businesses happen. They happen from somebody who is a true entrepreneur that wants to make that happen. Honestly, no offense to other people with silver hair like mine, but it often comes from young people who just say, by gosh, I want to figure out how to stay here. Burt's Bees came out of, he was a beekeeper, quite literally, and wanted to figure out what to do with the wax. And that's how that eventually evolved. So it's kind of hard to know what those projects will be. But what we have to do to make real economic development happen is to create an environment where that person with that idea is going to get support and help to make that idea happen.
Well, so if you're elected governor, then, you know, how do you marry those two concepts? Because economic development, you're saying, it has to happen at some level at the individual entrepreneur level. But what can the governor's office do to promote that and to make sure that is in a climate where it can grow?
Right. So I headed up Alaska International Trade. I headed up our offices in Japan and Korea and Taiwan. And the governor can do a lot to lead to create that positive environment. They can, for instance, one of the things we should be doing statewide is having statewide business plan competitions, not only helping businesses come out with ideas and show them to potential financiers, but also develop the expertise in developing those business ideas. The governor can highlight products to potential companies that would be interested in them. For instance, China, none of our governors have been to China since it became an active trader, and I'm telling you, you can't believe what Shanghai and Beijing are like. So we could get out there in a very visible way. Sitka was the place where the very first investment by Japan after the Second World War was made. Alaska had basically started its first office in Japan because of that investment in Sitka. So Sitka has, for its recent history, its statewide history, its state, you know, while we've been a state history, as a international trader. But we've lost that in state government. We really have no international trade program of any consequence whatsoever. And we don't have a governor and leaders in the state who understand international. And yet, that's where our markets are. We've lost track of the fact that we are a Pacific Rim trading partner. And I think the governor can do a lot to change that.
One more issue before we get to the one political question I have. But here's the last issue question. Subsistence fishing rights for Alaska Natives. It's regained a lot of attention lately. Some have said that the limits on what can be caught are way too low, and that people should be allowed to catch more fish on behalf of their villages. Do you support an expansion of subsistence limits for Alaska Natives?
I'll say it stronger than that. I support a rural preference for subsistence. And a rural preference for subsistence means that I think what's being highlighted with Senator Kukesh's efforts right now is that we really haven't dealt with that subsistence issue. And sadly, Alaska allowed a big portion of its land, 59% of its land, to fall under the management of somebody else, the federal government. I mean, it's a shame that where we had fish and game managing all our fish and game resources with that sort of common knowledge across those populations, and critters don't know where the state land ends and the federal land begins, or the native land ends and the federal land begins. So it's a shame that we don't have that unified management that we used to have, and that's because we failed to solve the rural preference for subsistence. I think what folks in Angoon were actually saying is, guys, this issue didn't go away, and you need to take a look at it. Most people in Alaska, if it were taken to a vote, polling when this issue was up before, said they supported a rural preference. Now, that's not a native preference. That's if you're living in rural Alaska, and you're defined as rural Alaska, and there's not enough resources to go around. So now the issue is who needs it to just for food, then they should get it first. I think that's a rational idea, but I think we should also manage our fish and game resources for abundance, which our Constitution also says. And as long as we do that for abundance, it should never be an issue. But we also do need to make sure that And it's an important both cultural and traditional aspect of Alaska that a lot of us, native and non-native, use fish and game resources as a big part of our food. And, we should support that. But, I live in Anchorage, I'm going to go down to City Market and buy a steak when I want it, you know, and I don't go hunting for a moose because I wouldn't know what to do with a horse in my freezer. You know, it's just way too much food for me. But the thing to remember is that Alaska is a far-flung place with very different lifestyles. And I think we as Alaskans need to support that and be reasonable about it.
The two other Democrats running for the nomination have a lot of name recognition and some would argue more than you have. So
they do have more than I do.
What's your plan to get your name out there and convince Alaskans that you're right for the job?
Well, there are a couple other elements I want to add to that, too. But the first part of the plan was to kind of adopt a plan a fellow named Barack Obama did. You know, this is a man who ran for president with a name that sounded enormously like a terrorist. And he managed to get over that over 22 months. I announced January 8th, and if you track it out to see when the election is, it's pretty close to 22 months. So the first thing is get out there and work hard for a long time and try to build that name recognition, which we're doing. Now, if you talk to political professionals, they'll say, oh, heck, you just raise a bunch of money and you can buy name recognition. And that's true, too. But here's I think, the bigger issue. I get asked two questions. One is that name recognition question, and the second is, hey, you've never run for office. I mean, you've never held political office, so what qualifies you to be governor? Well, I've been here for 28 years, a 28-year career. I've served four governors. I've run the Energy Authority, the Industrial Development Authority. I run half of the Department of Transportation. I've been Commissioner of Administration, Director of Environmental Conservation, Head of International Trade, and half my career is in the private sector. So I've done a lot of things in business. So when you think about the job of governor and you think about the person that you'd want to do that job, the job is, first, it's a leadership job. You have to have a real vision for Alaska and know how to make that vision happen. The second is, it's a big management job, 12 departments, lots of subunits. It's a $5 billion a year adventure. And thirdly, it's a political job. Voters kind of get in the habit of voting for the guy that they've heard the name the most. But what you really need to do, just like you'd hire somebody in any business you might run or a board you sit on, you'd hire somebody that can actually do those jobs, who has a proven ability to have vision and make that come to reality, who has the management skills and experience to get that management job done, and who can work their way through those politics well. Now, it's kind of funny, they ask, well, you've never run for office before. Yep, I haven't, because I've never wanted to be a politician. And the only way that you can be governor is to run for political office. So what I want to do is be governor for two terms. I think I'm uniquely qualified to do that. What you will never hear me do is run for Senate later or House or hope somebody drops out of the sky and picks me as vice president. I am just going to be governor, and after hopefully two terms as governor, I'm going to go write and teach. And I think that that's the right way to approach it, because in every decision that I would make as governor, I would be deciding what's right for Alaska and Alaskans, and not about how it's going to affect my chances at running for the next political office. I mean, if you think about it, when Sarah Palin and Sean Parnell got elected, just 14 months after they got elected, they went looking for new jobs. That's what you don't want in a governor. You don't want somebody that's constantly looking over their shoulder for the next job, the next rung up the political ladder. What we have to do is have a governor who knows how to do this work and get the state back on track, because we're not. You point out that Sitka's got real economic trouble. I guarantee you, you go to any town in this state and they're going to say the exact same thing. What we need is not somebody whose name we've heard so many times that we just, like Robitons, write it on the ballot. What we need is somebody who can actually get the job done, and I think that's me.
All right. Well, Mr. Poe, thanks for stopping by.
Well, thanks. I really enjoyed it.
Bob Poe has lived in Alaska for 28 years. During that time, he's worked for four governors. He's one of three declared candidates for the Democratic nomination for that office. This is KCAW Raven Radio in Sitka.